Hello, everybody. We are celebrating the 30th episode of Sandell Podcast. I can't believe we just hit 30 episodes. But what better way to bring in the 30th episode than interview someone whom I admire greatly, someone who I've been watching for quite a long time. I own a fun guy myself. I walk around with a multicolored mushroom and one of my favorite avatars to run around in the space with. The man, the myth, the legend himself, Touche, is going to be speaking with us here. Barely got it by. He's a hard guy to get to. Had to convince the community first that this was something that they wanted, and ended up being able to make it happen. So, Touche, I appreciate you coming on the show. And
no problem.
I still love that gimbal thing going on, which is following you around everywhere you go.
I got to turn on my light so that people could actually see my face. Thanks, man. Thanks, appreciate it. And yeah, sorry for the lot of hit and misses there. It's been a busy past couple of months, I'll say that much.
No, I definitely understand that. And we'll get into some of that as well. Just the story, the build up. So the scope of the talk today is to pay homage to our friend Touche and get a little perspective from someone who's been in the game for quite a while. So, like I said, pay homage and gain a little perspective. Disclaimer, as per usual, we do not represent the Sandbox Game or the Sandbox DAO Foundation. We are not your financial or legal advisors, and nothing Touche and I say is to be taken as such. When we say, actually, we don't really need to talk much about, because we're not going to be talking about the DAO much. It's just going to be talking about the story in the background. So I'm going to skip right across scoreboard and the checkbook. It's not really relevant for today's talk. And jump into introductions. I'm Lanzer. I'm a landowner and podcast host of Sandow. It's all about the Sandbox DAO. And for this episode in particular, we're jumping into a community perspective, someone specifically a studio. We've had studios on before, but never quite like focused like this. So this is the first one. It's the 30th. It's all around just a special, special time. So that's me. I've been in since 2021, December. So about mid-season one. And Touche, you've been in a studio far longer. But let's get into your background. Please introduce yourself. And where does it all start?
Yeah. Okay. So in specifically with the Sandbox stuff, I guess I've been in the Sandbox since, I think, February or March of 2021, just around that time. I think I got started with the Game Maker Fund around then. I got interested into NFTs. I had a friend reach out to me that knew I was an artist and was like, hey, have you heard about this NFT thing? I was like, nope. They knew I was in crypto and stuff and had been interested in that. So they're like, you should check it out. At the time I was actually moving from Oregon to Washington, where I am now. So pretty much as soon as I got here, set up my computer, started looking into NFTs, and then just thought the technology was pretty cool. And there was obviously like a lot of hype around it and everything. So I originally got started with a platform called Foundation. Have you heard of them? Foundation.app. So I tried to get like just some of my artwork listed on Foundation. It was like an invite only thing, pretty hard to get into it and all that stuff. But eventually I got in it, like started getting really, close with like the people that kind of ran Foundation and everything. And eventually became, got offered like an administrative role there to a degree, like kind of like modding / helping them out with some stuff. I did that for probably a month before I found the Sandbox. Ready Player One is like one of my favorite kind of movies and stuff. So I was like, oh, this is close. You know, we're getting there. So I was like, let's see where this goes. Right. And so 2021 was really a kind of like a difficult time to get any information about the Sandbox other than like, to be honest with you, I thought, you know, everything was already live. It was really kind of hard to figure out that it even wasn't live and stuff, because you could buy the land and then you're like, well, what do you do with this? So the only place to really go for information at the time was like the three or four streamers that were streaming at the time, one of them being Andy. And so I got into Andy's chat.
Shout out to Andy Ritchie.
Yeah, I got into Andy's chat about March 2021. And he taught me a lot of the beginning stages of Game Maker. There was like no YouTube tutorials or anything, so you just kind of had to ask questions. I think at the time we were before, it was the Glitch in the Metaverse Game Jam that was about to happen. Never participated in a game jam, never built a game in my life before, so I was like, I don't know what the hell I'm doing. But I had a concept for a game. I was like, hey, let's, you know, I had these like mushroom characters that I had drawn, the fun guys, and I was like, cool to like, because someone tells you make a game and you're like, what about, right? And so I was like, what do I know? I know these characters. Let's just try to tell a story with them. It was like a different way of telling a story, right? At the time, I had been working on like comic book scripts and stuff like that. And making a comic, making an animation is expensive and takes a long time and stuff. And building a game in Game Maker was a little easier than that, you know? So I was like, well, much easier than that. So I was like, let's do that. Yeah, and cheaper, you know? So, so I built that, told the story. And at the same time, I actually went into the... Before I actually got in the Twitch channels and all that stuff and started learning about the sandbox and everything, I like wanted to like create. Originally, I went to the sandbox to like create voxel art, right? I was just gonna make the like little mushroom dudes and then just see if they would sell on the marketplace, right? Because the first NFTs that I had created were these trading cards of the fungi's, and I was like, oh well, let's keep the theme. Let's build 3D versions of the fungi's, and if anyone buys the trading card, they get this like voxel model and all that stuff. So originally I wasn't even interested in game development. And when you went to the Sandbox website at that time, if you went to VoxEdit and you went to publish a model, it automatically threw you into this page on the Sandbox website that was like the creator forum or something like that. And it was basically, you had to, in order to ever to publish something through VoxEdit at the time, you had to be a published artist. So you had to be a Creator Fund artist or a Game Maker Fund artist. And I was neither of those things.
That was the biggest obstacle for me, is I didn't even know how to get into that at the time.
Yeah, you couldn't publish anything. So so the form pops up and it's like, hey, if you want to publish, you have to like fill out this form. And I just thought everybody had to do that, right? So it was a really long form, and it was like asking me like, what do you bring to the sandbox? And all of a sudden I was like, I guess it's new. Like they got to check everybody. What I didn't know at the time was I was applying for the Game Maker Fund and I had no idea. I was accidentally filling out the Game Maker Fund form, and I filled it out with the fun guys. And then this thing was like, what kind of game would you want to build? And I was like, I don't know, like Stardew Valley, but with these mushroom dudes. Anyway, filled it all out. Next day I got an email from Seb that's like, I love your Stardew Valley idea. Let's build it in the sandbox. And I got in the Game Maker Fund. It was literally an accident. Like I didn't even mean to do it. So got in the Game Maker Fund.
GMF 2021.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, okay. Yeah. So got in it completely by accident. I think I was the 27th project in the Game Maker Fund because they like labeled it like Fungi 27 or something like that. Already at the time, there was like a few familiar faces, like Tempest was in there. So like I became friends with Cody and stuff and all of them. And it was like a really cool, like camaraderie time. Like it was all very new and very fun. So then afterwards, you know, getting involved with the communities and being like, I guess I got to build a game now. Like, cause I have no idea what I'm doing. Started learning through Twitch, participated in the Glitch in the Metaverse Game Jam by building a demo to the Fungi Kingdom game that I applied to the Game Maker Fund with.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I got third place with that game and made something like $6,000. It was the most money I'd seen in like a long time.
$6,000.
Yeah.
Got it.
$6,000, and I used $5,000 of that to build this PC that I now have, which Andy had done the same when he won his game jam, the first one. So it was like, and I actually built kind of like the same exact PC as him because I, at the time, had no idea what I was doing with all this shit. So,
we all start out somewhere.
Got involved with the Game Maker Fund kind of by accident. Built a demo, got third place with it in the game jam, and I was like, this is pretty cool. And at the time, I was moving to Washington and, like, starting to apply for jobs and everything, and I just stopped. I just stopped applying for any jobs. I was like, I guess this made me more money than I would make in, like, a few months at an office, so let's just do this until that doesn't work anymore. And
so you went full-time?
Yeah, right then and there. I mean, I wasn't doing anything else, really. So I had, so previous to that, right around COVID, right before COVID, really, before 2020, I had started a marketing business with a friend in Oregon. And we were doing pretty good, and then COVID hit, we lost all our clients. And so it was like about 6 months of like not knowing what we were doing. We moved here in the middle of COVID. So like I was just like, I mean, maybe I can get a remote job somewhere. All our clients had like dropped off the face of the earth. We had like two clients left out of like having 20. And so it was just, it was a bad time. So the marketing thing kind of got put on hold. And I was like, well, I have to go look for a job then. And then came here, sandbox thing happened. I was like, I guess we're putting that on hold too. So then, yeah. And then pretty much kind of just rode that wave until now.
And
here we are.
And you were full-time before the end of 2021?
It's hard to say because I wasn't doing anything else. Like, I didn't have a job, right? I had my own marketing company. Okay. And that had been so slow that, like, you could say I was full-time, but I was, like, full-time that as well, even though we weren't doing anything. I was definitely doing most of my time was spent in the sandbox, though, yeah.
Gotcha. So you were all in. And on the website, it said it was established in 2010. What's the connection there?
So Touche Studios has been around since I was, like, 20 years old. I thought I was, like, pretty clever and came up with the name Touche. My last name is Shea. And so I was like, hey, Touche.
Touche. Yeah. No, I connect it. It connects.
It was a little funny high school name, and then I used that. That was the banner that I kind of started my original freelance company under. So I did logos and websites and stuff for people since 2010. And I've been doing illustrations and stuff, like, you know, little one-off things. People want me to design their D&D characters, stuff like that. Freelance work since 2010. And then I really hit the ground running with, like, the studio thing. We officially started doing game development, obviously, in 2021. So I wasn't game developing in 2010 at all.
Right? Gotcha.
It was just marketing and stuff like that.
No, that makes sense. That connects. I started my first business when I was, like, a freshman or sophomore in college. And just, you know, my creative outlet. And then it became more serious about publishing books to Amazon and then music to iTunes. And I started getting serious the more I started maturing. But in the beginning, it was just, I've got a company.
What the hell is this thing, right? Yeah, it's like, it's at some point, you just start learning what a company does. And then you start doing things through the company. And it was like mostly a learning process for me. Honestly, they don't teach any of this stuff. So it's like, let's see what this does, right? And people are doing it. So I guess building a business is a good idea. So it was just like a 20-year-old entrepreneurial, like, I don't know what this is, but let's try
that's
it.
Right. And then let's see where it goes. And that's why whenever nowadays, if I could give my younger self advice, it'd be stop worrying about trying to make a picture perfect and just go do it. Because from then on, you start building the foundation for where you are now. If I could have done that 5 years earlier, there's no telling where I'd be right now. I don't know, but you live and you learn.
Yeah, that's actually like a big reason why I'm doing what I'm doing now. I started doing the whole painting thing after I dropped out of Sandbox, and we're probably getting ahead of your slides here.
That's okay. It's all good.
I thought the same thing to myself, right? Like my passion is painting, right? Like I love putting messy paint on a canvas and then making it look like something that wasn't just a, you know, paint in a tube.
And I can see that in your Twitch streams. It's really cool to watch how it evolves from just a mask into something well-defined. Like I said yesterday or last night, what your Final Fantasy character, the way that you kind of fleshed out the coat.
Yeah. And I'm not a good artist. I'll be the first to say, like, I'm not a very good painter, but I'm using this opportunity to learn. And like a big, big help in that is scheduling learning time, right? And so the streams for me are like scheduled time to learn how to paint, and I'm just doing it in front of everybody else, right? So I asked myself the same question, like, about 2016 or something like that, I did the same thing that I'm doing now, but in a much smaller scale. I lived in a tiny house in the back of my parents' house in Florida, and my dad and I built a tiny house, and I lived there for 3 years. And about the last year that I was there...
Like a proper tiny house?
Yeah, yeah, tiny house.
Right on, right on.
8 by 22, or 8 by 20, or 22, I forget. Solar panels, the whole nine. Compost toilet. I mean, I went all tiny house.
Oh my gosh, man, you went hard in the paint.
Yeah, it was great. I loved, it was like a good lesson in downsizing and like figuring out what you need and what you don't. Yep.
You learn real fast what's real important to you.
Yeah, and I obviously had my parents' house right there, so like it's not like I threw everything away that didn't fit in the tiny house, but mm-hmm. I did learn how to pack enough so that when I eventually did move to the West Coast, everything fit in my car and a trailer and a small little U-Haul.
And what was the impetus behind moving to the West Coast?
Getting out of Florida, to be honest with you. I'd been there for 14 years, and I was just like, we'd all been saying, let's go, let's do something else. And it was just, why not? I mean, I'd been at the same job for 9 years, corporate. Just like, it was great gig, right? Like, great money, and, you know, it was a graphic design, and it's like what I wanted to do, but I fucking hated it. Every moment of it was just like... I mean, I was doing graphic design. I was graphic designing medical pamphlets. So it's like, how entertaining can that
medical
be for anybody?
Medical pamphlets. Yeah, yeah, yeah. The height of inspiration and motivation.
Exactly. Yeah. And it kills you. I mean, time goes backwards, dude, when you're doing that kind of stuff. And it's just, it's such a drag. And so I was like, I can't just do this forever. And if I ever want to, I'll just do it again, right? Like, might as well try something new. And yeah, so... picked up and moved out here.
Gotcha.
But yeah, there's so question I asked myself going back to like that, what would I have told my past self is like, what do you want to get good at, right? Is like, what do you want to be good at in 20 years? Like, what if you could just see yourself in 20 years, what would you like to see in yourself? And in every venue that I explored, it's like, I just want to be a better artist, right? Whatever that means, like, I just want to be able to paint better or do whatever it is that's creative. I want to do it to the best of my abilities. And the only real way to get there is by practicing that kind of thing. So I asked myself, like, if I had not done game development for the past 3 years and instead painted every mm-hmm. single one of those days, what would I be painting right now?
Where would you be like, now? Yeah.
Right? What would the paintings look like? And so it's like, and even... taking that even further, if I'd never stopped since 2016 and doing the tiny house studio stuff, and I painted, I think I did about 35 episodes before I moved out to the West Coast, and I tried to start it up again, but then logistically things just didn't work out. So like, but what if I never stopped painting for the last like 8 years? Yeah. What the heck would I be doing right now? So asking myself those questions made me realize what was more important to me. And it was like, the game development is cool, right? It's like at some point you can kind of sit back and be very satisfied by creating something in the sandbox. But it's hard to get there. And there's a lot of reasons that I can go into why it's hard to get to that satisfaction, especially now. But this, the painting thing, dude, like as soon as I'm done, I sit there and I just stare at it. And it's like something that I can look at my work and go, okay, next time I'm going to do this differently. And like, I'm learning as I'm doing it, and it feels so much better. It feels so much more, like, satisfying.
It's much more organic. You see more in your element when you're doing that.
Yeah, and I mean, it's just, like, I don't know how to describe it other than, like, that is, like, meditation versus the game development stuff is, like, putting in work that is actual work, right?
Yeah.
So when I ask myself what I want to get good at, what I want to be good at in 5 years, I'm like, the game development thing is cool, but like, I want to be able to paint whatever I want, right? Like if I imagine it, I just want to be able to paint that. And that doesn't happen if I don't practice. So
even
now
then,
I'm saying
though, you were really successful, man. I think I recorded, so you had 14 games that I counted, multiple time Game Jam winner, GMF, 2021, and you achieve advanced partner. So in terms of people who achieve the pinnacle in the sandbox sphere, I don't know how much higher you could have gone. You seem to have struck a chord.
And isn't that kind of scary, right? Because I couldn't make it, right? And so like, I'll go back to these game wins. I'll be the first to say, like, I, Touche, was not responsible for most of those game jam wins. That's my team.
My team is brilliant.
Yeah. Zombie and Steven and everybody that worked on those games, like, takes that prize home, because without them, we wouldn't have been able to win.
Without the team, we'd be nothing.
Yeah. What all those other things mean, it just kind of happened, I'll be honest. Like, I didn't push to do anything. I found out I was an event trusted partner by an email. Like, it's very scary to me to be one of the most successful studios in the sandbox and know what I know about my finances and my problems and my studio. And it's just like, I couldn't imagine struggling any more than I am right now and still doing the sandbox stuff. Right. And like being, you know, staying through. And turns out that everybody is in that position. Right.
So it's like, position too, man. I discovered that early, and I've been a business entrepreneur for a while. I'm going to do a podcast episode on it. I'm sorry. Keep going.
No. So, but that's the problem, right? Is like all those accolades at the end of the day, it's pretty difficult to even do anything with that. So yeah, success is achieved in some ways, right? Like, but it doesn't mean much at the end of the day, unfortunately. So
yeah. And as I was, I guess you could say I was shocked when I read your tweet. I wasn't expecting it. That's the real way to say it. I didn't expect that was going to happen. And then Tempest happened. And then that may happen to a few other studios who have told me privately when I've interviewed. And I myself, as a studio who published two experiences, just the math was not working. And I'm like, what in the world is going on here? I just can't figure it out. And I didn't end up mathematically figuring out what the problem was. And I'm going to do a podcast episode on it. So to go down later. But can you walk me through the road that led you to the tweet? You had some very specific quotes that really stood out to me, like, that's a red flag. That's something to really ask about. Walk me through it. How did it happen?
Do you remember back when our friend Gary Gensler decided that Sand Token and a bunch of like 44 other tokens were going to be securities?
Yes,
and then
I
Sandbox
did.
Had to
yes,
do this whole like, hey, the U.S. can't be staking anymore, all this stuff.
That it was brought so up a fascinating bunch of to see that me, that right? was specifically mentioned. I was, wow.
So when that happened, right, I was like, okay, interesting. We're in the U.S. That's a big implication for me. I have sand staked. Do I have to pull it out? Turns out, yes. Okay. Well, sand staking was how we were supposed to get Catalyst for minting assets. So I'm going to take you back before Catalyst system, before the marketplace had been decided, and before you didn't need to mint assets to publish an experience. So at that time, my thinking is, you need to mint all the assets to be published in an experience. How are we going to mint assets when already the token is considered a security? Are the assets now going to be considered securities too? All these questions that you start asking, how am I going to get paid out for the rest of my GameMaker Fund contract? Is the sand that I'm earning, am I able to earn that anymore? Is it legal for me to have sand as a U.S.? And you ask all these questions to the people who you're supposed to ask these questions to, and they have no idea. So instead of giving you any answers or finding out what the answers are, they just cut off that branch. So no more staking. So I'm like, okay, if no more staking, how are we supposed to get the catalyst to be able to mint the assets? Oh, well, don't worry. You won't have to do that because you won't have to mint assets anymore to publish experiences. So you won't have to mint. So what's the point of the marketplace? The marketplace was supposed to be created so that people could upload assets so that game developers could buy those assets because they needed to have minted assets to publish their games. If you no longer need minted assets to publish your games, you don't need assets minted on the marketplace. Marketplace becomes pretty irrelevant except for what? Equipment, which is the only thing people are buying right now, right? I figured this out
that
back when they
did not escape my notice.
Said,
yeah.
Right? So back at, okay, so you have no more need for marketplace basically, because the minted assets are no longer a thing. It's much cheaper to hire someone to build a tree than to buy a tree. And so as a game developer, you're going to hire the person to buy the to build the tree. And so the entire marketplace becomes irrelevant. Then they decide, how are we going to do Catalyst? So it's no longer going to be mistaking. If you look at the original white paper for the sandbox, the way that they were going to distribute Catalyst was going to be proportional to how many districts, key districts, that you would be able to create, right? So you and I, if we had land next to each other, we could create a district. We could stake sand onto that district, and we would earn Catalyst proportional to our stake in that district, right? So yeah. Each district gets Catalyst. Those get distributed to the people who stake within that district. That's all gone. That doesn't exist anymore at all. And it's not coming back. It's just, that's not how it's working anymore. So what's the point of having those districts? What's the point of staking even? Is it just to earn kickback on sand? They're not even distributing catalysts through that. So everything was shifting.
Yeah,
right?
That was a big thing for me. Catalysts. I was in the pre-catalyst version, and that's how I had made my business model. Yeah. And then the new catalyst system came and just threw that all out of whack. That's where all my math is based
on. One asset per mint. It just became this whole, like, they were changing the whole goalpost.
It changed the game, homie.
Yeah, it wasn't even like they were shifting the goalpost. We changed the field. We changed the type of ball we were using. Yeah. It was all completely different. And so you're like, okay, well, if this is happening, the implications are that the marketplace is going to deteriorate. The catalyst system is, sand is going to be just devalued to hell and back, because the only thing that people are earning is sand, and there's no reason to spend that sand anymore. Big reason that you own sand is to build the games, because you needed sand in order to buy the assets. If you don't need to buy the assets, you don't need the sand. And so every time you get sand, you dump it. Why wouldn't you? Right? Like, it just makes sense. So it was just, there's so many just like bad business decisions, in my opinion, that were made that changed the whole perspective of what I thought was going to be done with land and assets and all that stuff. So yeah. That was probably, what, how long ago did the catalyst system come out? How long ago? That's been a year in my mind.
Yeah.
Yep. And then on top of that, like, we pitched to, you know, they say that you get 1% of the clients that you pitch to, right? So if you pitch 100 times, you get one client. We pitched 120 times and got one client. And I was like, this is a lot. This is too much. Like,
you were pitching for what?
Companies. We were sending emails to, I mean, all sorts of different companies. People would reach out to us, and then we would pitch to them, and they wouldn't get back to us. It was a very interesting time where it was like people seemed to be interested, but then the moment they found out how much things cost, it was like, we're not interested anymore. And yeah. So the reality of the situation is, like, you got to pay people to do these things. Like, I'm not charging you 10 times what it's costing me. I'm charging you pretty much what it costed me times two, so I can hopefully keep some money in the bank. And yeah, everything was just too difficult. And then the last decision, I mean, if I'm being honest with you, I was going to close down the studio, or at least, you know, start thinking about packing up shop much earlier this year. And then the first Builders Challenge happened. We didn't do anything for 5 weeks for the first Builders Challenge. And then week six, we released Fungi Kingdom. And I think I barely did anything for that. Like, I mean, I put about, I don't know, I think it was like 1,000 sand towards it, you know, like it wasn't much in terms of like rewards. And then we, without trying, we pulled in 70,000 sand in the first Builder Challenge without even trying. So, and only doing it for half of the time, and we got in top 10. So I was like, holy shit. All right. That was 70,000 sand, kept the studio running for a little while. So I liquidated all that, kept it for salaries, used that for salaries until Builder Challenge 2. Builder Challenge 2 comes around.
Hey, FYI, I'm thinking, I put in a boatload of effort the whole time, made 9,000 sand. Continue.
Yeah, no, I know. It was surprising to me that I was like, holy shit. I did not expect to get to that 10 so much. So we got 20,000 sand, and then the top 10 prize was an additional 50,000 sand, right? So the 50,000 sand was really what made everything worth it. But the 21,000 sand, I cashed that out thinking that's all we got. Then when people started showing, oh, we got the top 10 distribution, I was like, man, that's cool for them. You know, like, I was super, like, kind of jealous, to be honest with you. I'd be like, I should have tried harder. And I went to the claims page 3 days later because I saw a little thing on there. And I had the 50,000 sand waiting for me. I was like, I got into top 10? How the fuck? Like, I had no idea how it would be possible because we didn't do anything for the first 5 weeks. So I was like, obviously, Builders Challenge 2, we'll try now, right? I'll put effort into the whole 10 weeks. built this whole elaborate thing, and then they changed the whole reward structure, right? So it's always shifting goalposts, and that's really the big problem. You cannot build a business off of a target that moves and disappears sometimes, and then pops up behind you, and you're like, what the hell's going on? So that's really the big problem, yeah.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I mean, I'm celebrating your success. I'm so happy that you made 70,000.
It was awesome. No, don't get me wrong. Like that was incredible for me, and I was like, holy shit, there might be hope here, right? And it's like, and I think we got too comfortable with that, and I thought, you know, maybe there's still an opportunity to do this over and over again.
Sure.
Builder Challenge 2 was fraught with challenges that made that impossible, but yeah, ultimately what ended up leading to that tweet was seeing the results of Builder Challenge 2, realizing that we don't have clients, the money's drying up, we don't have any prospect of any change, and to be honest with you, I don't see the sandbox chain making any crazy advancements that would make all of those things possible, like getting clients, making money, all those things, for another 2 years. So like, do I sit here and wait 2 years and spend all my money and then be broke? But I waited 2 years, right? Or do I just pull back, let the 2 years pass, and then come back if it's better, right? And that's what ended up being the decision.
Yeah. I made, like I said, 9,000 sand. My partner and I split the development cost, and we paid about $20,000 to build. And we put our heart and soul into that. I had partnered with some major nonprofits like military, new gamers who had never done the sandbox before. We ranked 7th one of the weeks. We were going hard. And then we just started getting outpaced, and I could not figure out why, man. It was killing me. It was killing me. But I don't begrudge any of your success. I'm really glad that you were able to make it. What did you say you made for Builder Challenge 2 that was a lot less? I think I heard you say.
In total, I think we made something like 26,000 sand or something like that. But we gave away 16,000 in rewards.
Yeah.
More than that.
Oh. But. You gave away 16,000 in rewards. Wow.
I think it was like 18,000. I just finished sending out all the rewards. It ended up being quite a bit. We only made in profit about maybe 10,000 sand, which is $2,000 for 10 weeks of effort. Like, and a team of 7. Like, you see how this doesn't
math. Yeah, I see the math is not mathing on that. Yeah. Yeah. That and some people just, if you don't know, trying to maintain a leaderboard, manage reward system manually is so hard. Do you know how many hours I spent on Excel sheets to try and keep track of rewards and wallets? Unbelievable. Anyways, a moment of kumbaya on that. It is tough. It's a tough life out there.
And that's the problem, right? It's like, at some point you feel like everyone's just looking at you like an ATM, right? With extra steps because they have to like play a mini game before they can withdraw cash.
Yeah, submit a screenshot here and there. Yeah.
Oh my God, the amount of messages that I get after a leaderboard is finalized, from that moment until I send out the rewards, I'm getting pinged every single day, multiple times, from different people asking me when I'm going to distribute rewards. And you just got to look around and go, what do people think I am? Like a machine? Like, what do I do? Just sit here and like, no, dude, like, oh my God.
Frustration. I had the same thing during Builder's Challenge, the same thing. And you know what? Some of them, I really like them. They're great community members. It's like I'm tech support. Like, hey, I didn't get my reward yet. When is it coming out? And like, I submitted my wallet. I'm like, all right, let me.
So like, if you're asking about things that, you know, all frustrations like that can be remedied by different things, right?
Yeah.
And so much of it is in the power of the sandbox. And that's why you go, well, do I sit here and send reward? Like, it's annoying, tabulating everything, making sure everything's correct, checking with the community. Then people are like, hey, I think I submitted a score. Can you check? And you're like, no, you submitted it to the wrong form. And they're like, oh, I'm sorry. And then you're like, oh, well, do I forgive them? Do I put them in there? Or is it okay for anybody else? You have all these problems that you're like, it would be so solved, so much easier if Sandbox had their own leaderboards that people can just, I can automatically see who's at the top, like, submit it, go to the Sandbox dashboard. Who got top 10 in my game this week? Okay, boom. Immediately pay them out. There's a distribution system. There's a claim page. Why can't we use that? Like, there's so many things that you're like, this manual process is, it might seem like it's simple and easy and all that stuff, but it's so tedious and so easily solved. Maybe not easily, but solved. It's solvable. And you're like, if that's not a massive priority, it's like, how the hell? How is anybody thinking of running a business here? Manual, like, distributions of things is just, it's a very archaic system.
It's rough.
Like,
yeah. Tulip is agreeing with you in chat, by the way. Just same here. Excel with 20 plus sheets to cover 10 weeks.
Oh, dude. Yeah. I mean, I have every single time. Oh, dude. I can't even. Oh,
there's, and Joseph there's asked a really good question that I'm going to ask later on. I'm going to put it in our community question chat. Right on. I completely identify with the pains and the hardships. The only thing that changed between you and me, with the obvious that you've been in it for quite some time, is that the DAO and my business background. That's the only reason I think that I'm still so motivated. Otherwise, I reached the same conclusion you did. I did the same math you did, and I came to the same conclusions. Like, this is rough. Like, We're early to the point where I don't think I can sustain an actual business model here under these conditions. And it was very.
I no longer think it's fair to say that we're early, to be honest with you. I think that.
Go on.
I think that this has missed. I think that unless there's a course redirection, this is missing its target of being what it set out to be. The white paper is completely different from what it originally was, even in 2021. I mean, we've got to look at those things and go, is the shift actually beneficial to us, or is it to the investors who have taken hold of this company, right? And at some point you go, I don't know if this is the best UGC platform out there. I don't know if this is going to be able to, I don't know if you can say that we're early and things are still shifting and all that stuff. I hope now but I also think that early shift has to be an early shift in a course redirection. They can't continue doing what they're doing now and expect to be successful. Outpace Roblox and Minecraft and Fortnite. You're crazy. You're absolutely insane. Look at those platforms. Look at what they're doing. In the 3 years, the Unreal Editor for Fortnite wasn't a thing when the Sandbox got created, when the Sandbox was popular in 2021. They shifted. If Fortnite is shifting, why are, like, there's just so many things that you look around and you go, at the end of the day, do you sit there and rock your boat on these waves, or you just dock for a little bit and wait till the sea gets a little calmer? Yeah. Right. And that's the bottom line, I think. Right?
I see. I'm picking up what you're putting down. I think that makes a lot of sense, especially someone who reached the depths of the SandFam space that you have. Was there a difference? Did things change when you became an advanced partner?
No.
Okay.
No, I think it's like an arbitrary title thing. They just wanted people to have a badge, you know?
Gotcha.
No new clients, nothing. Yeah, nothing like that.
Got it. Yeah, I'd always been curious because that advanced partner looks pretty nice. I mean, it's a nice graphic. I'll give it to you.
It's a nice graphic, but what you really get with being an advanced trusted partner of the Sandbox is you get a dedicated person to a person, your account manager, right? And they're there to be your liaison through everything. But they have just as much Roblox as you do, right? Like, it's not like you're talking to Seb. As a matter of fact, most of the times I would just talk to Seb because it gets things done faster, right?
Yeah. Like, I'm doing the same thing. I'm trying to just liaise to my account manager, not trying to jump the ship too much unless I have to. Same thing.
Yeah. But all right, so that's really the crux of it. Yeah.
So describe to me, like, when it was good, what were the highs like?
I mean, building with the team, right? Like, that was cool. I do enjoy. We had team meetings every Wednesday, and so those meetings are really fun.
Sound like a proper team.
Yeah, we get together and kind of play the games that we're working on and stuff. Catch up with everybody. I think that those are always good highlights. You know, we have a lot of all the games that we build, especially all the multiplayer ones. We demo with the team first, and like those are some really fun times. The highest of the high was probably that first game jam win, and I think everyone would probably say the same thing or similar. Like that first game jam win and going, holy shit, like I don't have to look for a job for the next few months, you know? That was crazy. I would say probably those moments are the highest of the high.
Was there anything else that stood out to you? I mean, amidst the sea of criticisms that we may have, what were some other standout things for you?
In terms of like,
just good the overall experience.
The overall experience, I mean, can't lie, it changed my life, right? Like, I'm eternally grateful about to Seb specifically. I don't extend that gratefulness to every Sandbox staff person.
Sure. Yeah.
Or the Sandbox themselves directly, but Seb, an awesome person.
He's a believer, man.
He's a good guy.
I reached back into some 2018 YouTube videos. Yep. He's a believer.
At the end of the day, he's a good person. Like, I think that was really the thing that was hardest for me. And before I put out that tweet, you know, I had a conversation with Seb. I sent him a message on WhatsApp, sent him a long video, explained everything, gave him my thanks, you know, like it wouldn't be fair for me to leave without giving him that courtesy. And it was really that conversation with him through my, you know, having a call with him that made me realize, like, there really is nothing better for me to do here than to step back right now. Even chatting with him, like, I was like, this is the clear choice. Actually, I mean, I went into that call hoping that he would say, but wait, there's more.
Yeah, yeah.
It never happened. And so after that, I was like, okay, yeah, it's the time to step back, right?
Yeah.
And then on top of that, like, you know, it's just client work in the Sandbox is a very difficult thing to build. It's just that's a bottom line, you know.
Yeah. Cold calling. It's tough groundwork. Yeah.
Even when you get the client, you got the project out there. Your game maker update happens. Who's responsible for it? You know, game's broken. What do you do? Right. Do you have a service contract? No. Is the guy going to be okay with that? No. What do you do? Right. And you just. No one has answers for these questions. We're all just making it up. And it's like, you can't just be spending thousands of dollars a month just trying to figure it out. Like, I'm not wealthy. So it's like, you got to, like, really look at where the money's going and going, well, that's not a good place to put money right now. Right? And so that's bottom line, I think.
But, yeah, I faced the in real time, that's happening to me. I created for Builders Challenge 1, Floor Droppers, and within 6 months, a game maker mechanic came that just upended it completely. It destroyed the mechanic. And now I'm in 0-0, by the way. I made it in season 4, but I had to face a choice of completely rebuilding the game mechanic or finding some emergency fix that would make it work in time. And this is something I built in May for Builders Challenge 1. It's already a new update has made it obsolete and broken some of the game logic, the way the messages are sent. And it's just like, what am I supposed to do? I'm not a whale. I'm not wealthy. So
yeah. Now imagine Atari being on the other end of that call and they go, hey, game's broken. And you're like, yeah, but you already paid me for it 6 months ago. And they're like, it's broken though. You got to fix it. And you got to fix it. And you got to pay your people to fix it for free. So it's like, yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of problems with it. I think if you have a lot of money, if you were in Bitcoin early and you love game development and it's a passion for you and you got time to employ some people and give them a good life and a good income, by far the best thing to do is start a Sandbox studio and spend your infinite amount of money on on developing for and giving artists jobs and giving game developers jobs. That's cool. But if you don't and you're trying to make money with this, it's a very difficult thing to do.
Yeah, I'm still very, very hopeful and optimistic. I haven't yet been in it long enough to have that arch that you have. But I see where you're coming from, and I see the same things you're seeing.
Yeah, and look, I still think that it's possible for the platform to have success. I don't think it'll be easy. I think it'll be, and like I said in that tweet, it'll take years, not months. And so for that reason, I'm going to give them the space for the next few years I'll watch, see what happens. But there's no reason to ride that wave with them. Like, there's no reason to beat yourself up while they're getting beat up. It's just, if they make it, just go back, right? Like, yeah. I don't need to suffer with everything, every decision that the Sandbox makes right now. If they make good decisions in a couple of years and it's a good idea, then we'll make some more games. But until then, it's like.
Okay. Yeah, I know. Got it. Now I'm tracking picking up what you're putting down. So the next one I had was whether or not you were involved in SIP voting, and I already know the answer to that. So we're just going to gloss over that.
Yeah, for the record, I think the DAO is dumb. I'll just put that.
You think it's dumb?
I think it's the dumbest thing that the Sandbox has done.
Oh, man, I think it's great.
And they've made some pretty dumb decisions. I think that offloading business decisions that are primarily a concern of a business to a community is a sheer lack of responsibility. And that's about all I have to say about that.
No, that's
the only SIP I ever voted on was the one for Magic Palette, but that was because I was supporting those guys, but not because I thought it was something that needed to go through a DAO.
Well, thank you for at least voting on that one. Like that, I'm really pulling for Pepe, and I'm gonna do another update soon when we have another demo to show, because I'm excited for that. I think it's gonna be great. But
it's a great tool.
Yeah. In terms of the DAO, it's got it. I'm tracking. I think it's bold. I think it's a very bold decision, and we'll see where it goes.
Fair enough.
Yeah, fair. Fair enough. So I had a question that was what needs to be true for you to return? However, Joseph asked an even better question, and his was, do you think you would come back to the Sandbox if you could build an experience and mint an unlimited number of access passes? For example, you mint 1 million access passes and sell those like a traditional game.
So people play the game, pay to play the game?
Yeah.
Yeah, if there's monetization. But yeah, and this is part of that. It takes years, not months, you know? Talking with the Sandbox and talking to leadership there, everybody knows this, how difficult it is for business decisions to pass through a corporation. And so something like that takes years to implement, at least, right? And so, or at least it's not done like in months. So yeah, of course, this is part of the package that I say would have to happen for the Sandbox to attract studios that have left, right? We have to have monetization. We have to have ease of the leaderboard tools and platform features that are available, claim page, all the things that we've all talked about, that's all part of like a package. I think that's included. Yeah.
Got it.
Monetization of the games is just a joke right now. We pay to get people to play our games instead of having people pay to play our games. Like, because you pay for people to play and then they ask you where their money is. And so it's like, you get slapped from this hand and then slapped from the other.
Yeah. Tulip says that TSB as a hobby developer, as a side job is nice. TSB as a life income is not yet reliable enough. And I completely agree.
Yeah. And for a little while there, I could say that it was possible for like definitely indie developers, right? If it's you and a buddy doing it, probably possible in 2021, 2022, not 2023, 2024. Yeah.
Fair. No, that's fair. I identify a lot with what you said. I think I'm just 2 years to the right of you before I reach the same point you do. And because I'm a serial entrepreneur, and the DAO has entered the market where it's like business, community, and gaming, I'm sold. I want to make it better through the DAO because I'm very business oriented. That's my background. And so I see that now as my outlet. But give me 2 years, maybe I'll be where you are. I'm optimistic. I'm optimistic.
Fair enough. And that's a good place to be. I think you should be optimistic. If you're not optimistic, what are you doing, right?
Right. But right. What are you doing? Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's good to be optimistic. I could say that I'm neither pessimistic or optimistic at the moment. I'm just kind of a bystander. I haven't even grabbed popcorn. I'm just kind of letting it do its thing, right? You know, I'm also growing the family. You know, I got a baby on the way. She'll be here in
Congratulations.
December. Congratulations. So I'm kind of focused on a few other things at the moment. Yeah,
life turns upside down. So, is it boy, girl, or you're just waiting?
Girl.
Congratulations, my man. Right on.
Thanks, man. Very excited. So yeah, you know, it's like a lot of life comes at you fast, and you can't just sit here, you know, and it's awesome, but you can't just sit here playing in the sand. So.
Right. Well, I mean, I don't want to belabor it. I think we hit everything that I think the community's asked me to ask, that I was myself curious. Do you have any special shout outs, special thank yous you'd like to give out?
The team. The team is the people I have to thank the most. They put up with me figuring out what I was doing for the last few years. So Zombie, Wayward, Steven, Biagi, Karatras, Gnarls, those are the guys that really put everything together for the last few months specifically. Got a shout out to Nate too. He was part of the team for a while before he stepped back from the sandbox for a while. You know, those guys made things fun. I think that was a lot of fun. Also, I got to thank Hoddle Hill, who is basically a team member, I feel.
Hilo Hill?
Hoddle Hill.
Oh, Hoddle Hill with one L.
who's been everywhere that we are. You can find her. And I think that's community members like her are things that make you want to keep going. I think it's a shame to not be able to do more things like this because the opportunity to meet people like that. But you know, it is what it is. I think
Hoddle was one of my for Builders Challenge 1. She was one of the people who helped. I have her listed as a partner, but she was one of the ones who would stream Floor Droppers and playing it. And I never, like, she was the easiest person to work with. Never asked anything or demanded anything in return. It was just a, how can I help? And I really, really enjoy Hoddle. And I was just on her stream before we were podcasting, doing her marbles game. And it was, I love Hoddle. She's great.
Another shout out would be to Onebox. I call Onebox our one true gamer. I think he's the only person in our community that is a gamer first and the rewards come second. If we had 100 one boxes, I would have been making games forever, but that's just not what we have. There's people like one box play the game for the love of the game, and they will spend time there just to see what you did. And when, I mean, especially for games like ours, where we hid so many things at first, like all the original games that we made were, I could say that probably no one ever found everything in them. And one box would be there turning over every stone.
The Easter egg specialist.
Yeah, those are gamers. Those are the guys that you want playing your game. I think you have that category of gamer, and then you have the other one that's in the sandbox, which is here because it's easy to make a little bit of money.
Sure. And
it's,
make that go up.
But yeah, exactly. But shout out to him as well. Yeah.
And give it to me one more time. You started with Zombie. What were the names on your team?
Zombie, Mandy, Wayward, Steven, Biagi, Karatras, Mr. Gnarls, and Nate as well. Panyola Nate.
Mr. Gnarls?
Gnarls. He's my best friend from Florida, Kyle. He's known him since I was 14, and I was like, he's always
kids in school.
Yeah. Funny story about Kyle. He always said he wasn't an artist, and always said like I could paint and he can't do art and all that stuff. And I got him a job working with the studio, and he made voxel art. And so now he can never say that he's not an artist anymore because he made voxel art.
That's right, Kyle. Zombie, Mandy. I think I missed one between Steven.
Biagi, Steven, Caratraz.
Gotcha.
Oh, Caratraz. That's yeah.
Yeah. Give me a little leeway. Close.
I'll give you the spellings later.
All right. Cool. Yeah. I'm really big into credit where credit's due. Like we do not get here by ourselves. We have teams. Yeah. We have people who help mentor us to make good, wise decisions. And you know, Seb, the Sandbox team, what people in the chat, Tulip, Joseph, Hoddle. I think I saw a few others, Nasman, Sebga, just community members who you see time and time and again, who contribute to the overall good, contribute to you. It's really special to call them out, to recognize their contributions, and appreciate you shouting out to them.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. I think that's about as much as I wanted to delve into. Are there any open topics? Oh, I did have an open topic. Dude, tell me about the mushrooms and your artwork. Like, what is it about the mushrooms? Is there a specific story? Your artwork is very focused.
Yeah, so another shout out. This is to a YouTuber. His name is Struthless. He put out a video. So Truthless? Back in 20... Struthless. Have you heard of him?
Mm-mm.
Yeah, he's a YouTuber, makes a lot of art videos and stuff like that, motivational videos and stuff like that. Really cool guy. He put out a video, I think it was like 4 or 5 years ago at this point, I don't even know. And at the time I was just trying to figure out like how to, you know, a big problem for me as an artist was you'd have a blank piece of paper in front of you and you're like, well, I want to get better, I want to draw something, but I don't know what to draw. So you spend time looking for inspiration and blah, blah, blah. So he put out a video that was like how to defeat that part of the artist's struggle, right? It was like you don't know what to draw, and it's like if
like artist writer block.
Yeah, mostly sometimes like that. It's like you stare at a blank canvas and you're like, well, I don't know what to put on them, right?
Got it.
And so it's a big barrier because if you can trick yourself into going, well, I don't know what to draw, so I just won't draw, you know, and then another day goes by and another day goes. So in order, you defeating that is like a really important step into just being creative overall, right? So he put out a video that was basically like, in order to solve that, what you do is just focus on one thing for an entire year, right? And so at the time I was just drawing little doodles. I had this, I would make stickers. I still have a ton of stickers. I made stickers for like, after my marketing business kind of like imploded in COVID, I just started drawing and making stickers and selling stickers for a while and stuff like that. And it was always like, what do I draw today? Right? It was always like pop culture themes. And so I was drawing these mushrooms for some reason. Like I would draw little mushrooms and they were fun to draw. And so in his video, he basically, his thesis is find one thing to draw and just draw that for an entire year. Don't draw anything but that. Every time you go, what do I draw? That's what you're drawing, right? And so I had to pick a theme that I thought I would want to do. I think his was ducks or swans or something like that. He like drew ducks for an entire year or something like that. It was like an animal. So I was like, mushrooms. I'll just draw mushrooms for an entire year. And so this was like, I don't know, 2018 or something like that, 2019 or something, that I started just like listening to his video and just drawing mushrooms and stuff. And I was like, probably half a year into it when I drew the fungi. This was back when I still lived in the tiny house. I drew the fungi. I drew the first of the mushroom houses. So let me just take a step back here. So this is one of the, this is the first little, well, sorry, camera's not.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I seen that on your website.
So yeah. So there you go. Yep. So this is the mushroom house that basically became the figure and everything. This figure. So that's how I got started with like drawing mushrooms. I just started drawing these little guys. And I would sell these little things for like 20, 30 bucks a pop, these little watercolors. And at the time I was like, cool. And people like the mushrooms. And so I just kind of stuck with it and kept drawing mushrooms. And that's why. It was literally just picking an object and I picked mushrooms. I could have been drawing, I don't know, frogs right now, but it's mushrooms. I don't know. I like mushrooms. They're very cool. I don't eat mushrooms. So I call it, I say it's part of my, I don't eat my own kind, you know? Gotcha. So I don't eat the fungi. But they're fascinating. They're fascinating, specimens. They're, mushrooms are very interesting. They're like the closest thing to aliens other than octopus, I think, that we have on this planet.
Yeah. Yeah. They have a fascinating biochemistry.
Yeah, they're interesting. But previous, actually, up until this year we found a larger organism. I think it's a sea kelp. But prior to that, the largest known organism on the planet was a mushroom that lived in Oregon and Washington, and it is 2,000 acres big. If you don't know, mushrooms, actually, the mushroom that you see that pops up above the ground, that's actually the fruit of the mushroom. Kind of like an apple is the fruit of the apple tree. The fruiting body of a mushroom is the thing that pops up. So the spores and all that stuff, that's the little cap, that's the actual mushroom fruit. Underneath is the actual mushroom mycelium. And the mycelium makes up most of, it's like an iceberg. You know, you only see 10% of the iceberg on top of the water. The mycelium network underneath the mushroom is what actually is the actual mushroom, and where actually most of the medicinal properties for mushrooms come from and all that shit. But the largest mycelium patch, yeah, is a 3.5 square mile fungus. Yeah, there you go.
Holy smokes. I didn't even know that was possible.
Crazy, right?
That's crazy.
Yeah. It's fascinating stuff.
Oh my gosh. It looks like a fish.
Yeah, it's a very cool, so, and it's all underground. It's a giant network of mushrooms. And so in that area, if you see a mushroom over there and you see a mushroom over there, they're probably from the same patch.
Yikes. I will never look at the mushroom the same way again. Thank you for ruining it for me.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Appreciate that. I had a similar experience. I come from the writing culture. So where you would paint, I would write articles or write novels. And when I hit my writer's block, the way I got out of it was I imagined a new story, and that ended up being the books that I ended up publishing to Amazon, and that ended up being the one that won awards and stuff. It was crazy, man. It was just like this random thing I invented in my small little tiny house equivalent dorm room, and where I lived for a year, and it was. It's funny how the creator process just kind of unfolds. It just comes from the most random of things sometimes.
Yeah, you just got to let yourself be creative. And then I think opportunities with that creativity pop up, right?
Yeah.
I think it's hard to figure out what you would do in order to make money with painting, even writing, right? You're like, oh, I'm going to be a successful writer. I'm going to sell thousands, millions of books. It's like, good luck, right? Like it's not just writing the book and then all of a sudden it sells, right? It's not just painting the painting and then all of a sudden it sells. But doing it, right, gives you, like, it's really dumb to have the end result and how do you sell the painting, how do you sell the book, be the thing that stops you from making the painting or the book, right? I think if you approach it from I'm just going to be creative and see what happens here mentality, the results are just, they speak for themselves, right? It's like, never, what is the quote? Don't ever expect anything and you'll never be disappointed, right? Something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Man, this has been a great conversation. I really appreciate you taking the time to expound upon your perspective. I definitely learned a lot. And maybe just talking about mushrooms and talking about all the background, the build up to where we are now. Thank you for spending the time to help me understand.
Yeah, man. Thanks. This has been fun.
Yeah. For the spaces, the normal thing, Mondays, Saturdays, Tuesdays, monthly. I haven't seen Sanfam with Pickaxe and Bruno. I haven't seen him do anything as of late. I know he mentioned he might take a little bit of a break. It seems like he's done that now. So as of right now, if you'd like to if you'd like to talk about your story as well, I'd love to talk to you. And as a good farewell send-off for now, Touché, thank you for everything you've done for the community. Thank you for your involvement. And thank you for just being a real community member where you've contributed to the positive growth of people around you. Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah. It's been fun.
Yeah. So in terms of, I normally raid people at the very end, and the only people I see on right now is AU24K. Is there anyone specific that you see that we can raid?
A is a great guy. Let's raid K. I think that's a great way to go.
Yeah. All right, AU, Goldhoust. I didn't win, gosh darn it, on when we did the leaderboard for that to try and kill as many people as you can. So next time we'll get them. So we'll start the raid. And again, thank you all for your time. And most especially to Shay, thank you for your time and looking forward to seeing you again in the future.
Thanks, man. Appreciate you. Thank you, everybody. I hope to see you again soon and catch me on the paintings.
Yeah. Peace out. And yes, Touché does paintings. I just go in just to watch the nice little meditation music in the background, painting something that you can't figure out quite at first, but then he has like an inspiration of what he's gunning for. And it turns out I really love seeing how it's manifested. So thank you all for your time. And Sand Fam, we'll see you.